Ever been curious about the homes of the rich and famous of days gone by? Wealthy industrialists like Getty or Rockefeller, who had so much money they could afford to have several homes. Places where people supped in black tie, rode to the hounds at dawn, and spent long afternoons playing croquet and sipping mint juleps in the Rose Garden. The mansions these tycoons called home were the subject of a story Kim Clark and Faye Rice did for Fortune magazine. They've come to assure me that even if your family doesn't own oil wells or have its name emblazoned across railroad cars, for the right price, you too can live for a few days like, as Kim and Faye call it, a robber baron. I asked of all the places they stayed, which was the most outrageous?
Clearly the mansion on Turtle Creek, which is now considered by Zagat as the number one hotel in America.
But it started its life as?
A mansion. It's always been called the mansion, and it was built by a man named Shepherd King II, who was a big cotton mogul. And he and his wife Bertha spared no expense to make their tri-level, rusty pink stucco home the most elaborate and palatial in Dallas.
Where did the idea, Kim, for this story come from?
Well, actually, I just happened to be visiting my husband's uncle, who works at the Saturn plant, and we just happened to stay at a place called Milky Way, which turned out to be the former hunting lodge of chocolate baron Frank Mars.
And this is located where?
About an hour south of Nashville in a small town called Pulaski, Tennessee. And it was a hoot. There was barns all over the place, and the barns each had chandeliers, and we stayed in this incredible hunting lodge, and we had breakfast at this 36-foot-long table. I mean, this place was incredible. And I sat there thinking that there must be other great mansions like this that I could stay at. And so I started thinking about it and started making phone calls, and I was actually surprised to find how few there were. We did limit it to homes that were within an hour's drive of a city because there are some vacation spots that are also used to belong to, let's say, the Rockefellers or the Carnegies, but they're really far. They're hard to get to, and we figured that our readers might actually want to visit one of these on a business trip instead of staying at a Ramada. They might stay, at the Burpee Mansion outside of Philadelphia.
Can almost anybody stay there, or is there a 3-month waiting list? Do you have to know somebody to get in, or is it pretty, is it run like a hotel?
All of them are run like hotels. They're fairly easy to get into, make a reservation, and they're affordable.
I wanted to say that what we were surprised by was how affordable these places were. The cheapest one we stayed at was, I think, $80 a night, which is, you would pay at any sort of mid-level hotel.
Where was the $80 place?
Fort Hook Farms outside of Philadelphia.
And Faye, did you go to the Wrigley Mansion atop the hill there on Catalina Island off outside of L.A.?
No, Kim went there.
I went there, and that was terrific. That had to be the most beautiful setting of all the hotels we saw. This is a beautiful white mansion atop a green island overlooking the blue Pacific. You have to take a ferry or a helicopter there, which is means you have to make this little extra effort to get to the inn on Mount Ada. But, boy, is it worth it. The Wrigleys, own the Chicago Cubs. And so they would take the entire team out to Catalina Island every spring for spring training. And the spring training grounds were down below in the actual town of Avalon. So supposedly, William Wrigley would have a telescope there on his sunroom and would watch his team. And if the team didn't seem to be working hard enough, he would order them to run up this quite significant hill that his mansion was perched atop so that they would build up a little sweat and pay their respects to him.
That's what I call a robber baron.
Right.
Did you learn anything about the men, and they sound like they're all men in this case, who built these places originally while you were staying there, and are there any signs of the former owners remaining?
Oh, in all the homes there are signs of the former owners. Let me just stop and say this. Most of these places, except for maybe the Burpee Mansion, were rescued from ruin. They were in disrepair and in some cases possible extinction. And the owners have gone in and spent millions to restore them to their original splendor.
Can I just interrupt you? At the Burpee Mansion, which was the most authentic of any of the hotels we stayed in, it's still owned. It's the only one that's still owned by the family. Jonathan Burpee is the grandson of Atlee Burpee, who wrote out all those terrific catalogs and started the company. And you can go into what is now the family, what is the family homestead, and you can actually sit at the desk at which Atlee Burpee wrote out his catalogs and invented some of the all-time great vegetables, such as iceberg lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rudy, this is something that Faye and I have been talking about. In a way, visiting all these homes was inspiring because these were the great geniuses of American business. But it's also humbling because in almost every case, these great fortunes were either lost or dissipated, or the mansions fell into disrepair because the family didn't want to keep them up or couldn't keep them up. And it makes you realize that even if you built up a great fortune one or two generations from now, maybe you would have some sort of, all you would have left is a sort of crumbling relic of a mansion. It was very interesting. It was a lesson about the transitory nature of wealth.
Somebody better alert Bill Gates immediately up there in Seattle.
You know, the other thing we wanted to say about this, you know, staying here is that you can always stay at a Ramada or a Marriott or a Holiday Inn, but if you stay at one of these places, you're going to remember it for the rest of your life.